Dear Dr. Murchison, forgive me for this rather belated reply to your letter. You will, I am sure, understand why I found it hard to entertain your inquiry with any pleasure. To be blunt, you evoked painful memories which I have tried for 10 years to forget. The expedition crippled a friend of mine and killed another. It is not something I care to revisit. You mentioned that you are working on a monograph on phobic disorders, by which I take it you mean abnormal fears. I regret that I can tell you nothing which would be of assistance. Moreover, I fail to see how the case, as you put it, of Jack Miller could provide appropriate material for such a work. In your letter you conceded that you know little of Spitsbergen, or indeed of anywhere else in what is often called the High Arctic. This is to be expected. Few people do. Forgive me, though, if I question how you would then propose to understand what it can do to a man to overwinter there, to battle the loneliness and desolation, yes, even with the many comforts that our modern age affords. Above all, to endure the endless dark. And as circumstances dictated, it was Jack's misfortune to be there, alone. I don't think we will ever learn the truth of what happened at Gruhuken. However, I know enough to be convinced that something terrible took place. And whatever it was, Dr. Murchison, it was real. It was not the result of some phobic disorder. And in this respect I would add that before entering politics I undertook some years of study in the sciences and thus feel myself entitled on 2 counts to be considered a reasonable judge of evidence. Moreover, no one has ever doubted my sanity or proposed to include my case in a monograph. I don't know how you came by the knowledge that Jack Miller kept a journal on the expedition, but you were right, he did. I saw him writing in it many times. We used to rag him about it, and he took this in good part, although he never showed us its contents. No doubt the journal would, as you suggest, explain much of what happened, but it has not survived, and I cannot ask Jack himself. Thus I fear that I am unable to help you. I wish you well with your work. However, I must ask you not to apply to me again. Yours sincerely, Algernon Carlyle.
Chapter 1. Jack Miller's Journal. 7th of January, 1937. It's all over. I'm not going. I can't spend a year in the Arctic with that lot. They arrange to meet for a drink and then give me a grilling and make it pretty clear what they think of a grammar school boy with a London degree. Tomorrow I'll write and tell them where to put their sodding expedition. The way they watched me when I entered that pub. It was off the Strand, so not my usual haunt, and full of well-to-do professional types. A smell of whiskey and a fug of expensive cigar smoke. Even the barmaid was a cut above. The four of them sat at a corner table watching me shoulder my way through. They wore Oxford bags and tweed jackets with that elegantly worn look which you only acquire at country house weekends. Me in my scuffed shoes and my 6 guinea Burton suit. And then I saw the drinks on the table and thought, Christ, I'll have to buy a round. And I've only got a florin and a threepenny bit. We said our hellos, and they relaxed a bit when they heard that I don't actually drop my H's. But I was so busy wondering if I could afford the drinks that it took me a while to work out who was who. Algy Carlyle is fat and freckled, with pale eyelashes and sandy red hair. He's a follower, rather than a leader, who relies on his pals to tell him what to think. Hugo Charteris Black is thin and dark, with the face of an inquisitor, looking forward to putting a match to another heretic. Teddy Wintringham has bulging eyes that I think he thinks are penetrating. And Gus Balfour is a handsome blonde hero straight out of the boy's own paper. All in their mid-twenties, but keen to appear older. Carlyle and Charteris black with moustaches, Balfour and Wintringham with pipes clamped between their teeth.